둘, 셋, 파!
For Hey Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
If you're the purchasing manager at a manufacturing plant, you know having a trusted partner makes all the difference. That's why, hands down, you count on Grainger for auto reordering. With on-time restocks, your team will have the cut-resistant gloves they need at the start of their shift. And you can end your day knowing they've got safety well in hand. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
What if I get closer? I'm just using the laptop microphone.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, and welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org. Consequence and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks for checking out the episode. Hit that subscribe button if you're not already. You're going to get new interviews just like this one every single week from Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from. You can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. And please do leave a rating and a review wherever you're listening from. We've had some great guests drop by lately, including Lou Gramm, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame lead singer of Foreigner. I talked with Gobo from Fraggle Rock, as well as John Tartaglia, the guy who voices and puppets him. Sarah Bareilles was here to talk about Come See Me in the Good Light, the documentary about Andrea Gibson's last days on Apple TV. We talked with Gade Matarazzo. You know him as Dustin from Stranger Things. Felicity Jones and Carrie Condon were here to talk about Train Dreams, my favorite movie of the year, playing now on Netflix. Abe Sylvia, the showrunner from Palm Royale. Pearson Fodey, Audrey Nuna from K-Pop Demon Hunters. Just an example of what you get when you subscribe to the Kyle Meredith With podcast. And that's me, Kyle Meredith. Today, catching up with Juliana Hatfield. Always a pleasure to get to talk to Juliana. And this time, we are discussing her 20th album. 20th. It's called Lightning Might Strike. A pop rock gem born from a rough couple of years that includes loss and depression, and uprooting her longtime city life for a house in the woods. She's going to dig into writing through what she says is a long, slow, nervous breakdown, finding narrative threads in songs like Falls Apart, the unexpected heaviness behind the track Popsicle, and how working alone at home slowed the process but sharpened the focus. Juliana also will reflect on her early days in the Blake Babies, why some of that catalog is really hard to revisit, her reoccurring lyric motifs, and the possibility of returning to her acclaimed cover album series, this time with a full R.E.M. tribute. I could not be more excited about that. All that and more as we discuss Lightning Might Strike. It's Kyle Meredith with Juliana Hatfield.
Hey.
Well, let me officially congratulate you on Lightning Might Strike. I love every time you give a record, and I honestly mean that. And for there to be 20 of these at this point, I don't know why I'm surprised that I still love it as much. And every time I'm like, holy cow, this is still great.
Well, that's really nice to hear. Cause yeah, I think I can feel that when I'm making the records, I'm still inspired. And so I think if I did not have that feeling, I wouldn't make records anymore because I would know that they would fall flat if they lacked that, feeling that I need to have before I make a record.
And that's it, right? Because you would think after you've been making records for a while, and you've got the tools in your tool belts. Like, do you know what you're looking for? Is it something you start to realize when, like, I guess what I'm asking is, has inspiration changed? You know, do you recognize it when it's starting to arrive in the same way that it had in the past?
I definitely feel it. I feel it's like something just sort of kicks in, and it's not always there. You know, it's like people talk about writer's block, which is just another name, I think, for not feeling that you're in the flow of it or you're not inspired. But I think that if I feel like that, I just quit trying. I'll just walk away and come back another day, or else you just keep pushing through the crap that you're writing. You just keep working on it. You know, it's like, that's just part of the process, I think. But it's not that much fun to keep plugging away at something that you know is not working. So I have no problem walking away. And yeah, and I was writing a lot of these songs. I was working on them as I was recording them. It was, especially with lyrics, the lyrics were really not done when I started working on recording the music. So there's a lot of just like stopping to, you know, fill in the melodies with words. And that's the really, maybe the trickiest part for me. It just, the music, I can really like tap into something with the music, and then the lyrics take a bit longer. That's more difficult.
I don't know that it's completely different, but that makes sense to me, because it feels like a little bit more of a narrative style sometimes on this record.
Uh-huh.
Then I think that's been there through times in the past, but not always the same way. But I do feel it. Like, let's be honest, right? The album starts with Falls Apart and Long, Slow, Nervous Breakdown. It's like, that's a setup. Like, and to hear you narrate through these songs, you know, with great melodies. I don't mean that you're talking the whole way through, you know, but it feels like you're being very upfront, I guess, with where you were in your life at this point.
Yeah, I was talking about myself. Oh, I felt like I was having a long, slow, nervous breakdown. That's what it felt like. I wanted to express that I feel like I'm in the middle of a long, slow, nervous breakdown. And then I have the title, so then I try to explain what that means for me, from my perspective, going through that. And yeah, like I'm pretty honest about how I was feeling, but I don't like to just, I don't keep a diary, and I don't like to just throw diary entries out there. I like to have a little bit of finesse and nuance in the lyrics, and humor too, although maybe the humor is not as apparent on this set of songs than some of my other albums. But I mean, I think Long, Slow, Nervous Breakdown itself is kind of a funny expression.
It is a funny expression.
Because one, when you think of a nervous breakdown, you think, oh, that's like a sudden flame out, you know, and they take you away in a straitjacket or something. The Bunny Farm for a week. But no, this was like a long thing and a slow unraveling, or however I put it.
Do we still have Funny Farms?
What?
Do we still have Funny Farms?
You probably can't say that anymore.
I don't think you can't not say that. That feels dated, but at the same time, safe. I love that. I just haven't heard the phrase in a while. I actually appreciate it.
Kind of like a 70s thing. My dad, when I was a kid in the 70s, I remember there was some neighbor lady or an acquaintance of them in our town who had to go away for a while. And I asked my dad, where did Mrs. whatever go? Where did she go? And my dad said, oh, she went to the Funny Farm. And I said, oh, I didn't know what that was. And he said, what's a Funny Farm? And my dad said, it's where they plant people. And so then I had this vision of like people's heads coming out of the ground. And interesting.
That's funny how I have those same type of memories. My mom once, when I was probably around the same age you're talking about too, I didn't know what she did all day at work, and she said, "Well, I'm going to make pennies," and I instantly had this idea of like those outside water spigots, you know, especially in the old country houses, like that she would just be pumping that and pennies would fall out the entire time.
And so how long did you hold on to that image? Uh-huh. For like years, right?
Right.
That's what your mom was doing.
And we'll be right back right after this.
This episode is brought to you by Mubi, a curated streaming service dedicated to elevating great cinema from around the globe. From iconic directors to emerging auteurs, there was always something new to discover. With Mubi, each and every film is hand-selected, so you can explore the best of cinema, streaming anytime, anywhere. Like Pavements, Alex Ross Perry's rockumentary biopic hybrid about the only band that matters, Pavement. Starring members of the band, as well as Joe Keery, Jason Schwartzman, and Tim Heidecker, the wildly original picture tackles the mythology of the band, their anticipated comeback, and more in a fashion that matches their left-field ethos. To stream Pavements and other great films, you can try Mubi free for 30 days at mubi.com/COS. That's mubi.com/COS for a month of great cinema for free.
If you're an HVAC technician and a call comes in, Grainger knows that you need a partner that helps you find the right product fast and hassle-free. And you know that when the first problem of the day is a clanking blower motor, there's no need to break a sweat. With Grainger's easy-to-use website and product details, you're confident you'll soon have everything humming right along. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Juliana Hatfield.
Well, that's interesting, too, that you said in the middle of the long, slow, nervous breakdown that you decided to write the song, if I caught that right. Like, what an interesting point. Like, not from hindsight, like from the moments, like you're in it. And I guess there's a bit of a hopeful trust fall that you will eventually not be in that.
Well, yeah, from the beginning, when I was in the Blake Babies, I was always writing about my anguish, right? And my depression, my anxiety, and my hopeless crushes on horrible people. And, well, not all horrible, but yeah, like I always just kind of leaned into my angst. And I just always turned to writing songs as a way to endure the pain, or else maybe I was trying to make lemonade out of lemons. I don't know. If you have a bad breakup or something, a songwriter might, the first thought might be, this will make a really good song or a really good album. You know, like, it's like, if something really bad happens, it's material, right? Not that I would ever go looking for drama or bad situations, but I think that writing my way out of things is my way of just processing what I'm going through, because I'm not always tuned into what I'm feeling or why. So I have to kind of write to figure out what's going on, you know? And also I know from having been very depressed in the past, which I don't get very depressed anymore, but in the past I did. And I learned a lot from being depressed, but I one important thing is I learned that it doesn't last forever, and that you will, if you're lucky, emerge on the other side of it. So I knew from experience that, I mean, it was a hard year. I had kind of a difficult year, but I did have faith that it was, you know, I was going to come out of it. I was going to come out the other end of it.
Does that, when you go through a time like this, and we hear it also on songs like Ashes and Constant Companion, and I think Scratchers too, like, does that end up coloring how you feel about the album later? Like, when you look at certain records, you know, that's, as we say, right? That's the snapshot of our life during that moment or something. Like, does it make it any of your records more difficult than the others to look back on in that sense?
Yeah, I think that the whole Blake Babies catalog is kind of difficult for me to listen to, just because I was so angsty back then, and it's so just like I didn't know how to deal with my emotions that were really out of control. I didn't know how to live, you know. I was really kind of a mess emotionally and socially. So, and also the sound of my voice was just like very pinched and strident and pushing so hard. And yeah, the Blake Babies is pretty difficult, and I think I've mellowed out in some ways since then, and it's easier for me to, I think I have more perspective or more self-awareness when I'm writing. It's not like a an explosion of, I don't know, it's not so much a cathartic explosion. It's more like I'm controlling it a little bit more. So it's a benefit, I think, in a good way. Not over controlling it, but just controlling what I'm saying a little bit more. Like there's a little bit more bottom. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. It must be, I guess I'll use the word interesting, to have that kind of relationship, like when you're talking about the Blake babies and everything, because how you look at that and how you feel about that, and then knowing that there are people out there that's like, oh my God, that's my favorite, you know, mm-hmm. and their desire to hear it and want more from it, you know, like is that the relationship you have with that song? Like, how do you handle that?
Well, that's okay, because I just think of the stuff that makes me uncomfortable or uneasy. I think of it as something outside of myself. It's like an entity of its own. Like I think about that way. I think that way about everyone's musical persona. It's like the musical persona of someone. It's separate from who they are, I think. You know, it's something like Paul Westerberg. There's Paul Westerberg, the man, and then there's Paul Westerberg, the singing voice and the songs. And I don't know if this is healthy or not, but I tend to think of them as two different beings almost. And I think of myself in the same way. I listen to my songs back when they're complete, and I think, wow, that's like some weird creature that came out of me, you know, like, and I'm fascinated by it because it's not something that I have total control over. You know, I was born with whatever knack I have for coming up with melodies, and then I, you know, whatever the magic is that makes a song happen, and or voice, you know, I definitely was born with whatever the voice I have, singing voice. I can't change that, really. I've tried, but it's this thing that comes out of me, and it's not under my control. The sound of it is not.
I think that is healthy. I think that's extremely healthy, especially the way some people do put weight on certain artists, you know, that that isn't fair and everything, to have that kind of separation. I think that's completely healthy.
Yeah, because then you can hopefully meet the artist on a more common ground. If you meet the artist, it's like you can see that, oh, this is a person, it's not a god. Or sometimes it does get confusing when you meet people are super famous. There is definitely it's odd until you know, spend time with the person, get to know them. It's a little bit odd if you've ever met anyone super famous.
And sometimes there's nothing you can do about it. I've had those moments.
Like the feelings that you have?
Yeah, about, yeah.
It's sort of like a thing surrounding the person. They can't brush it off. It's just there. It's a phenomenon.
And you know, you have to have those people who are quite used to it. You know, like, I think Paul McCartney knows how to handle his fame very, very well. He is very
He seems to have been one of the rare ones who can sort of navigate all that.
Yeah.
I think it really probably destroys some people, because it's got to be so weird every time you walk out the door, or people are like staring at you. How awful would that be? I always think that fame must be a curse or a punishment for success or something like that. And I'm not famous. I'm not considering myself one of those people, but like, thankfully I'm not cursed in that way.
Iconic. Absolutely.
Well, thank you.
Without a doubt. But I getting to do what I've done for 25 years or so. And you get to a moment where, you know, camaraderie, and you become friends and everything, but there are those people, geez, I mean, the first time I ever met Stipe, I didn't know I was going to meet him. It was at a dinner, and it's like, I should be able to have a conversation. I can't say a damn thing.
Your nervous system is affected by whatever fame is, you know, whatever that aura is. It's the weirdest thing.
And we'll be right back right after this.
This episode is brought to you by Mubi, a curated streaming service dedicated to elevating great cinema from around the globe. From iconic directors to emerging auteurs, there was always something new to discover. With Mubi, each and every film is hand-selected, so you can explore the best of cinema, streaming anytime, anywhere. Like Pavements, Alex Ross Perry's rockumentary biopic hybrid about the only band that matters, Pavement. Starring members of the band, as well as Joe Keery, Jason Schwartzman, and Tim Heidecker, the wildly original picture tackles the mythology of the band, their anticipated comeback, and more in a fashion that matches their left-field ethos. To stream Pavements and other great films, you can try Mubi free for 30 days at mubi.com/COS. That's MUBI.com/COS for a month of great cinema for free.
Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Juliana Hatfield.
I've been talking a lot about the heaviness of it too, but like Popsicle, which is such a fun song. And I will admit, I have no clue what that song is about right now. I just know how it makes me feel.
Feel good?
And it feels great.
Good.
You know, because, well, the idea of the, you know, the Popsicle and everything, I mean, there's some nostalgia there, and the music feels like it kind of goes into that. I mean, it's just, it, especially in some of these heavier moments, it feels like this ultimate moment of levity. How close is that to the truth?
You're totally wrong about it. The truth is the opposite.
I'm not surprised.
I mean, it's like, I'm kind of equating a dripping popsicle to my dripping, to the way my mind is melting, mm-hmm. and the way I'm falling apart. It's like a popsicle dripping, or my hopes and dreams are melting away, that kind of thing.
That's good songwriting.
Yeah, no, I love that. I love what you took from it. I think that's totally fine. You don't have to know what I mean. And plus, like, just the act of singing that melody and playing those crunchy chords, that is levity. It's fun for me. Regardless of the subject matter, the fun of playing it and singing it kind of counteracts the heaviness of the subject matter. And it balances it all out.
And you did you do all this at your house as usual? And well, the apartment, I guess, in the past.
Yeah, my house. I did all of my parts in the house. So just the drums and most of the bass were done in the city, and by Ed Velasquez and Chris Anzalone. I played the bass on Popsicle, and on a couple of other songs.
And I guess that's part of the story. Like you sort of left the city behind for this out of the apartment life for the house. Like, did that change anything about, you know, the music or you know, is that part of the influence part of the story?
Part of why I left the city was that I wanted more space and room to just make my noise and not have to worry about the downstairs neighbors hearing it or being, not that anyone ever complained about the music, but I worried about it and I was self-conscious about it. So I felt that I couldn't be totally free when I was recording in an apartment. But I think being alone in the house, it took me longer to get the album done. I think just because it wasn't easy for me to just hop in my car and go over to the studio or to go to work out the parts with Ed and Chris. I'm slow. I guess I'm just slow. When I don't have days booked in the studio, I'm left to my own devices. And sometimes I'm only good for like an hour's work on music, on recording a day. That all the technology and the engineering drains me. And so I can only do an hour or two in. And so it was kind of a slog being alone, no help, but somehow I got it done. It took a long time.
I mean, it still arrives right on time, but it's only been, I'm trying to remember, 2 years-ish since the last release. Like, that's normal. That's normal. You're not late.
Well, I was kind of trying to put out an album every year, and I didn't make it this time.
Is that still the goal?
I
just turned into a greedy fan, by the way, when I asked that. That's what that was.
I mean, that's an album a year is probably too much for most people. They're like, oh God, another Juliana Hatfield record. The ones that are paying attention. Yeah. But no, I think I could still do it if I really try.
You've got, I mean, you, I don't know if the covers series is going to continue, but that feels like that's an easy out for that. Like, you've always got that in your back pocket.
Yeah, I could do that. If I do one covers album, one originals, it's, I like that schedule.
Yeah.
I like the back and forth of that.
Do you know who you'd want to do? Do you think about that? You don't have to give me the answer if it's hidden.
I'm looking at them right now over your shoulder.
Oh, you're looking at who you want to cover over my shoulder?
Yeah.
Which one? Bowie?
No.
R.E.M.? Prince?
Yeah, R.E.M.
R.E.M. Oh, could you do an R.E.M. album?
Yeah, I mean, I've talked about it a lot in other interviews, but that's what I want to do next.
Oh,
will I do it? It's very daunting. They have a lot of records, many of which I've not heard. The latter day ones I haven't even ever heard. So I have to do a lot of research.
And of course, I could
focus on the first half of their discography.
Yeah, you do the 80s REM, and if you want to later, you do the 90s REM, and you get two albums out of that.
The first one would be Juliana Hadlin sings REM Volume 1.
There it is.
Yeah.
All of my brain cells just exploded in the idea of that. I really hope this comes to fruition.
I keep talking about it, so I think I have to do it at this point.
That's a good thing way to make sure that you have to do it. If you put it out there enough time, you're like, well, I've said I'm going to do it, so.
Or it would be like, you know, remember when Guns N' Roses said they were working on Chinese Democracy?
For like 20 years, right.
And then they finally did it, right? They released it. Did anyone care that they released it finally?
Yeah.
Big, you know, do people care?
It's kind of a drag when I think some people love that, and that's I'm projecting my own personal thing on that. It was for such a long build up. That was the problem with it. I think if they released it right away, you know, it'd been fine.
It would have to be somewhat of a letdown just because of all the time that had gone by that, you know, like how could it ever live up to
right.
Mysterious, you know, waiting period.
Right. Right. That's, it's kind of the thing that we all play with in this business.
I should have known not to talk about what hasn't happened yet.
It's going to be great. There is one, I can't remember which song it was, and I only made the note, but there was one moment on this album I was wondering if it was a callback, because you said, I'm the only sister and the only daughter. And I was like, I wonder if that's sort of setting the record straight for the song Sister.
Well, not exact. It's kind of vague. But I was aware that it was, that it might make people think my song, My Sister. And I wasn't really trying to say anything about the song. I wasn't trying to say like, oh, I'm the sister in the song. I was just saying a true fact. Like I'm the only daughter and the only sister. I'm the only sister to my brothers. There were no other sisters, and I was the only daughter to my parents. I was trying to make that a fact. I guess part of me was unconsciously wanting to make people think about that. Like I was referencing, without realizing it, I was referencing my song, My Sister, like, because feeling like kind of alone in my family in a way.
Do you ever, have you ever done that? Have you ever like directly wrote sequel songs or continuations or songs that answer each other?
I don't know, but I do know that I've used a certain chord progression several times on several different albums. It's a certain like riff that I use over and over, and I don't know if anyone notices. And then also there's a certain lyric that I've used on at least three songs, and the lyric is I'm trying to get through this night without any help from anyone.
Well, it's an interesting idea, the sequels. And that would be an interesting idea, by the way, for a record on its own, sequel songs. But in the meantime, seriously, Lightning Might Strike, it's so good. And I'm definitely not afraid to over-compliment you on this, because you deserve every single bit of it. So congratulations, as usual. And thank you so much, as always, for taking the time to talk about it.
Yeah, it's great to talk to you again.
My thanks to Juliana. Lightning Might Strike is available. Thanks to you for checking out the episode. Hit that subscribe button before you get out of here to keep up with all the interviews that I put out every single week at Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from. You can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. And please do give the series a rating and leave a review wherever you're listening from. After that, you can head over to WFPK.org. That's where I do a show Monday through Friday starting 6 p.m. Eastern. 4 hours of classics from the 80s and 90s. You get the best in the new music, bonus interviews, lots of music news as well, fun trivia. One of my recent shows featured some classics and favorites from Harry Nilsson, Liam Kazar, Paul Westerberg, The Laws, Elvis Costello, Garbage, Jawbox, Radiohead, Bahamas, Rolling Blackouts, Coastal Fever, Foo Fighters, Barty Strange, Gillian Welch, Blind Melon, and my interviews with Dave Gann of Depeche Mode, Mark Gardner of the band Ride, Billy Idol, and Johnny Resnick from the Goo Goo Dolls. Just an example of what you get when you listen weeknights starting 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on any of the social media sites. The address is always at Kyle Meredith. Please do like, follow along. That does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Maya Hawk made an album. Oh my gosh, I didn't know that. She seems like a smart, she had her, an intelligence kind of shines through, like a humble intelligence.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
If you're the purchasing manager at a manufacturing plant, you know having a trusted partner makes all the difference. That's why, hands down, you count on Grainger for auto reordering. With on-time restocks, your team will have the cut-resistant gloves they need at the start of their shift. And you can end your day knowing they've got safety well in hand. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.